Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and the rest of humanity who are living on the planet Earth, listening via live streaming. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a happy Tuesday on this 19th day of July, 2016. And I thank you for your patience, those of you listening who are wondering why we did not begin at 4 o'clock sharp. That is still a mystery to me. We were having a problem connecting with the main radio network in Texas, but we eventually did connect. You may have even heard me saying things in frustration that before I even knew that we were on the air and being recorded. But anyway, I'm glad that vulgarity is no longer a typical habit of mine. But thank you for being patient with us and sticking around until we made contact and have begun broadcasting today. And I am looking forward again to our interview with David Innes. David Innes, who we have interviewed on the past on Iron Sharpens Iron, is going to discuss today faith and politics when Christ Church radically divides over candidates or abstains from voting. And David Innes is the chair of the program in politics, philosophy, and economics, an associate professor of politics at the King's College in New York City. He is the author, or the co-author, I should say, of the book Left, Right, and Christ, Evangelical Faith and Politics. And he's got a new book coming out very shortly, God willing, at the same time that Left, Right, and Christ is being re-released. So it's my honor and privilege to welcome you back to Iron Sharpens Iron, Dr. David Innes.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and the pleasure is all ours. And let me on air introduce you to my co-host, Reverend Buzz Taylor.
And we meet once again.
Good to see you, as it were.
And unfortunately for me, the Presbyterians once again are outnumbering the Reformed Baptists here.
Get used to it.
Well, according to my scheme of postmillennialism, that's not going to happen.
True.
But anyway, before I even go into our subject at hand, Dr. Innes, please let our listeners know something about the King's College in New York City, for those, especially for those of our listeners who did not have the privilege of hearing you last time or anybody else from the King's College that I've interviewed in the past. Let our listeners know about the King's College.
Well, the King's College is a Christian liberal arts college in Lower Manhattan. It has a PP&E core, politics, philosophy, and economics core of 20 courses that all students have to take. And then it has a few majors, politics, philosophy, and economics, media, culture, and the arts, business and finance. And these are all perfectly suited to be studied in New York City, with the city as our larger campus. So it's we have a wonderful group of students and faculty, and it's my joy to work there and serve the Lord there.
Yes, and I am looking forward to my interview with Greg Thornberry, the current president. We had scheduled an interview in the past, and something came up on my end where I had to postpone it, so we're still working on getting him rescheduled, and I'm looking forward to that, especially since I've known his father, John Thornberry, a Reformed Baptist church historian. I've known him since probably 1990. and has been a dear friend of mine and has written a number of books that I've interviewed him on. So I'm looking forward to interviewing his son, Greg. And this is obviously a very timely subject that we are discussing. It would be timely no matter when we addressed it in reality. But the fact that we are entering into the presidential race head-on between the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, and the Democratic Party candidate, Hillary Clinton. And last night began the Republican National Convention in Ohio. And before we get in any further into the divide amongst Christians over this political race, what were your thoughts on what occurred last night in regard to the speeches and so on?
Well, Donald Trump is running an anti-establishment campaign. That's obvious to everyone. And what is interesting is that on Morning Joe that morning, they were saying, well, you don't really have any big-name speakers, big senators and governors. I guess that's what you would normally have. They just had ordinary people. Well, some not so ordinary. And I thought it was very powerful. We had Willie Robertson speak first off. He's very popular. And but they had the theme for the evening was making America safe again.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite know what to expect. I knew there was a general that was going to speak and Melania. But the people who lost children to illegal aliens,
mm-hmm.
murdered by illegal aliens. That was very powerful. The Hispanic woman who lost her son, her only son. The African-American man who lost his son, I think his name was Jamil, shot by a illegal alien from Mexico who had been deported, came back, was deported. This guy was guilty of a number of things. You'd think they would just put him in jail if he keeps coming back over the border. And he shot the boy because he was black. It was heartrending to hear this. And then pointing out that the politicians were all behind him until they discovered that the assailant was an illegal alien. Then they all scampered.
Mm.
That was very powerful. And then the mother of Sean Smith, who was killed in the Benghazi attack, one of those four heroes, she was helped onto the stage by someone. She was frail. And speaking from the heart of a mother who lost her son, saying how Hillary Clinton lied to her and then called her a liar. And, it was very powerful. And these are ordinary people. So that was I thought, well done. Of course, the Democrats, at the Democratic Convention, you will have similar people telling similarly, genuinely heartrending stories of shootings in school, losing their children. It's a hard world to be living in, and there's no shortage of suffering to go around. But that having been said, it was a touching night, and it brought some realities home in a very personal way.
Yes, and so what did you actually think of what Donald Trump had to say and his wife, Melania?
He didn't really say anything. He introduced his wife. His walk-on was very impressive with the lights behind him.
Yeah, right.
Somebody was doing something right. Melania's speech, I thought was a very good speech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, like the others, she is not accustomed to addressing large crowds at a convent, giving speeches to large crowds. That's not easy to do. It's easy to get rattled. You could see the two Benghazi special ops guys. You could see how difficult it was. They were nervous on stage. But she held herself well.
Mm-hmm.
She delivered it well. English is not her first language, although apparently she speaks a number of languages.
Mm-hmm.
And she told her immigrant story. It's a reminder that there are immigrants in this country from all over the world. Canada, for example, I would point out, as one myself. She is from Slovenia. And I thought it was a very well-delivered speech. And it was only the next day I learned that some of the lines came from, were taken, it seems obvious to anyone who looks at it, taken from somebody else's speech. And then you learn that the somebody else is Michelle Obama, and your jaw drops. So that's the story today. Instead of what a wonderful speech she made, and it was a wonderful speech, the story sadly is, who is responsible for this? And why isn't so-and-so being fired, whoever it is? So a political campaign is an extremely complex and delicate thing.
Yes.
And you really need a lot of professionals to pull it off. And I think what you're seeing in Donald Trump's campaign is the kind of stinginess, the inexperience on the one hand and the stinginess in making up for it on the other hand are showing themselves.
Now, I may have missed something that you said because I was looking at the monitor to make sure that we were still back on the air, but did you say that Melania's speech was plagiarized from Michelle Obama?
Oh, yeah. On the news this morning, they were playing clips side by side of Michelle Obama's speech from the 2008 convention and Melania's speech from last night. And, you know, I'm a college professor. I know what plagiarism looks like.
Or sounds like.
The campaign manager said, oh, well, they're common words. There's no issue here. Well, I know that. I mean, if I passed off A Tale of Two Cities as my own novel, you know, would it be offensive to say, well, all these words are common words. They're all in the dictionary.
Yeah.
You don't have access to that. Well, no, it's the order of the words, the grouping of them.
Well, how identical was it? See, I didn't hear the news this morning because I've been busily attending to other vital matters in my life, so I didn't even hear the news this morning. But
if I saw this correspondence in a student's term paper, I would fail the paper.
Wow.
I would fail the papers, particularly when they come from another prospective first lady's convention speech. So it's not as if, you know, this phrase can be found here on the internet and that phrase can be found over there in that column. All the same first lady's convention speech or contender's wife speech. So it doesn't look good, but she was ill served by someone, and that has become the story.
Yeah.
It cannot be her fault. And even if she did it herself, somebody in the campaign should have caught it.
Yeah,
you can't do this. So either way, it is the fault of somebody in the campaign. But, you know, that's what happens when you're an outsider and you don't have a team of people you're bringing with you from a governor's office or a life in politics. I mean, there's a downside to that, but this is the downside to being a complete outsider. So there you go.
Well, let me quickly announce our email address for those of you listening who would like to join us on the air with a question. It could be in regard to anything in the realm of Christianity and politics. Doesn't necessarily have to be specifically on a thing that we are discussing at the time. It can be just under the general umbrella of Christian and politics. And our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. 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 And please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence, if you live outside the USA. Now, when you were saying stinginess, are you talking about the fact that they don't seem to be spending the time and money on the necessary resources and teamwork to make sure things like that don't happen, and like Melania duplicating a speech? Or what did you mean by that stinginess?
I mean that Trump has a small fraction of the paid staff that Hillary Clinton has, or that anyone in his position at this point would have. He doesn't have the field offices. He doesn't have the filled out national staff. And is that through inexperience, or is that through, I just don't want to spend any more money on this than I have to? I mean, I appreciate thrift. You're talking to the thrift captain right here. But there is such thing as a false economy, and there's an old Scottish, I underscore Scottish, phrase, don't sink the ship for a penny of tar.
Yeah.
Which apparently Scots are tempted to do. And his mother was Scottish. Let's not forget that. So this is all coming together now.
Okay. Let's see. We have a listener. We have Pastor Bruce in Farmingville, Long Island. He asks, given the overtly biblically based platform the National Republican Committee just approved in Cleveland, Ohio, isn't it time to support Donald Trump as the standard bearer for the party? If not, what is the standard for a nominee that has such a godly mission statement guiding his party? Also, if Donald Trump offers if Donald Trump offers a mea culpa in his acceptance speech for prior foolishness, would that make him acceptable?
Okay, I don't foresee, and I don't think anyone foresees, Donald Trump issuing the first mea culpa of his life. Okay? So that aside, the first part of the question, what is the relationship between a party platform and what happens over the next 4 years is the question. The party has come up with what I gather is a good party platform. I've heard snippets from it. I didn't read the whole 230 pages. That's no way to spend your summer. But Donald Trump is an anti-establishment guy. He does what he wants. So what he does is not necessarily what the party platform says the party stands for. And I'm not saying he won't. I'm just saying he doesn't have to. He can do whatever he thinks is wise at the time. No president is bound by a party platform. In fact, I rarely hear a party platform mentioned during the course of a presidency. Things change, the president has his own mind, or her own mind. The Democrats next week will come up with a party platform that will look like it was written by Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders endorsed her the other day on the basis of her being Bernie Sanders. He says, vote for this woman because she believes, and they just went through everything that he'd been campaigning on for the last 6 months, and she's nodding the whole way through. So whether she's nodding at what Bernie says or whether the platform says Vladimir Lenin was a great guy and we believe everything he said and that's our platform, she doesn't have to do any of that. And I wouldn't be surprised if she departed in a number of ways. So the platform, having a godly platform, an arguably godly platform, is better than the opposite. So whether or not Christians get on board with the Trump candidacy is a largely separate question, I think. I think the platform, given the Trump Trump influence on the platform, I think that's one reason that one might follow along and take a chance with Trump, but there are other reasons for and there are reasons against, and we can get into that when you want. So I don't know. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, we also have Pastor Mark in Merrick, Long Island, New York, who asks, after picking Governor Pence for his vice president, and obviously surrounding himself with some conservative influences, Carson, Walker, etc., do you think that more Christians would be inclined to vote for Trump, or will that not make a difference? Also, yeah. Also, I want your thoughts on the lesser or two evils philosophy.
Yeah, there's a lot there. First of all, what should we take? The lesser two evils philosophy? or the let's go to the Christians and whether or not to support Trump. There, this is a very divided election. We thought the Romney election was dividing Christians. I had good, godly, thoughtful friends saying, how can you vote for a Mormon? How can you put a Mormon in the White House? To which one might say, well, you know, I wish it was someone else, but how can you, in effect, help Barack Obama be reelected?
Yes, so, what you really meant to say was the Romney non-election, not the Romney election.
The Romney, maybe I meant nomination.
Right.
the Romney nomination. So that was a tough question for the Christian community. John McCain, I don't think, raised the questions, even though he didn't care much for Christianity. I don't think he came right out and said that. Clearly, it was not the driving influence in his life, whereas Romney. Anyway, but now it's even worse. It's Christians are really divided over this man who doesn't think he needs to repent of anything. If he needs God's forgiveness, he'll let God know, this sort of thing. But so there are many reasons not to vote for Donald Trump, and they've been stated quite eloquently on the internet and on publications like First Things and National Review and so forth. His narcissism, his materialism, his grab philosophy of life, and he's going to make America great by bringing us into that grabbing. The whole country's going to grab, and America's going to be great again. He said this after his Nevada win in the primaries. He said exactly that.
Right.
His three marriages, you go down the list, the way he speaks of people in public, The Democrats just ran a commercial today where it's got little kids with their precious faces looking at the television. There's Donald Trump saying these very crude things, and then they contrast that with Hillary at her best. And so, there are strong arguments to say evangelicals need to send a message to Washington, to the parties, and sit out this election and say, when you put up a candidate, not people around him, but a candidate who takes our concerns seriously, we will step in again. There are also arguments, good arguments, for supporting the guy as well. As I think you mentioned, an administration is not just the president. He's obviously a big part of it, but there's the people around the president. There seems to be good people around him. There's the effect the president has on the Supreme Court. Hillary Clinton will appoint leftist radicals who care nothing about the Constitution and everything about the cutting edge of enlightened thought. Whereas Donald Trump probably will appoint a conservative, Constitution-respecting jurist. So there's the effect on the Supreme Court, and that has effects, particularly at this time at the divided court, for one, two generations to come. There's the effect on Congress. Having a conservative or more or less conservative, more conservative than the other party, people in Congress with a president, a corresponding president in the White House, is a whole lot better than divided government so far, particularly when Barack Obama has set the precedent of legislating from the executive branch, saying, well, if Congress won't go along with me, I'll just do it on my own. So there's the effect on that. There's the effect on peace in the streets, terrorism. Trump seems to be somebody who will be more effective against the terrorist threat. Whether he succeeds or not is another matter, but he should be more effective. So there's all these considerations. So it's reasonable to think that a Christian person would vote for Donald Trump because he is more promising on these fronts, and he is not a criminal, he is not a traitor. The other candidate is a proven criminal, a demonstrated traitor, if I may say that, and so forth. So the temptation, particularly in this election, it was true in the last election, but also in this election, for Christians to judge each other. How can you possibly support this man? How can you possibly not support this man, given the alternative? And they turn on each other and treat each other as though they are, you know, utterly compromised Christians, and I don't know what you will say to your Lord on Judgment Day. We have to resist that. There are credible arguments on both sides of this, and these matters are difficult to figure out. We all know this is a perplexing election. So, and I am among the perplexed.
Yeah.
It's not clear to me, and I get paid to think about these things. So.
Yes, and it's what makes it obviously the whole thing more of a difficult decision to make is that most politicians either straight out lie or exaggerate. And Donald Trump, you would think that if he is elected, if he was being truthful about everything he says, he would be ushering in the millennium, really. I mean, the promises that he makes, but even, I used to scratch my head even listening to Ted Cruz, and of course, these are kinds of promises that nearly every politician makes, but Ted Cruz would repeatedly promise that he was going to bring an end to ISIS, and Donald Trump is obviously saying that too. How could you make a promise like that? You can't. But what are we to do with going back to the lesser of two evils? I mean, do Christians who say that to violate your conscience by choosing either evil is a sin, do they have a legitimate case there and say that if we really think that both candidates are evil, that voting for either of them would be indeed sin, just because we want to have a pragmatic approach to seeing somebody elected that we favor over the other in some fashion? I mean, are we not still, are we not still sinning by voting for somebody that we are knowingly pulling a lever for an evil person?
Yeah, it is a persuasive argument, I think, only on the surface. It's kind of like, And anyone who's been following this election will sympathize with this analogy. You're in a plane or a car, and it's out of control, and it's going to crash. And what do you do? You say, well, I don't accept this situation. I'm just going to cross my legs and read the newspaper. because I don't want to get involved. You're involved, right? So someone says, brace for impact. Well, who wants impact, right? But this impact could be better or worse. So you brace for impact. You don't just, carry on as if you're somehow not involved. A lot of us are looking at this election. Well, I say a lot of us, because both candidates have about a 60% unfavorability rating. This has never happened before. This is an unfavorability contest. But one of them is going to be president. If all things being equal, one of them will be president. So which one is it going to be? Are you going to help contribute to this one or that one? And at that point, you start saying, well, this one is terrible, but that one is worse. And you make up your own mind which this one and that one are. So, the lesser of two evils is still an evil. What a privilege. We've been looking at France in the news. We've been looking at Turkey in the news. And maybe you've noticed Nigeria. Jonathan Goodluck was turfed out, the Christian president. I think there was corruption there. What a surprise. And the Muslim president came, and I don't know anything about him. But this is the world most people live in. And historically, virtually everyone has lived in this kind of world. What a privilege that we've been living in a country where we can say, I'm not voting for the lesser of two evils because they're both evil. Well, hello, that's what most people have always had to choose between. Evil, a more evil and less evil candidate. And isn't it great to be able to have a popular influence, be part of a popular influence in one or the other, and thus have some sort of popular restraining effect on one or the other. So, and in America, this has been a largely Christian country, but it's less and less a Christian country. We've all noticed this. So this may be the future. People saying, well, I'm going to sit this one out because the voting for the lesser of two evils is still voting for an evil. Thinking that maybe next time there won't be evil. They may look two or three elections down the road and go, well, I thought things were bad in 2016. I don't think things are going to change. It's been four elections now. This may be what we're looking at for the future. So Christians, what are we going to do? And there is a there's an argument for, as a bloc, pulling back and saying, if you want our the support of our bloc, you put up a more godly or at least a more moral candidate. But Chris, what do you think the chance is of evangelicaldom acting as a bloc? Okay? I mean, I'd be all for that, and I'm actually on record saying that in an interview, but as I that would be nice, but is it going to happen? Is it sort of like, you know, five people pulling back or even 50,000 people pulling back and saying, let's all do this. This will work. Knowing full well that most people are going to do this or that and not what they're doing. So it may come down to I, a citizen, a Christian citizen, but a citizen, have this voting responsibility. And I can advance this candidate or that candidate. I can limit the evil in this way, or I can advance. It's kind of like maybe it's like the like abortion voting in Congress. You voted for a bill that supported abortion. Yeah, I did, but it limited abortion. It's a step. Yeah, people in the in the in the anti-abortion, the pro-life world understand how incremental. Voting, incremental policy advances are actually help people as opposed to, well, this is the righteous position and I'm never voting for anything except this entirely righteous position. And what you're left with is your feeling of righteousness and babies are dying. So perhaps it's like that. But I'm not saying that that I've got it all figured out. I'm perhaps helping people in your audience figure it out.
And we have to go to our break, right?
As we approach this wreck.
We have to go to a break right now. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Don't go away. We're going to be right back with David Innes.
Thrivent Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Lending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Iron Sharpens Iron Radio is sponsored by Harvey Cedars, a year-round Bible conference and retreat center nestled on the Jersey Shore. Harvey Cedars offers a wide range of accommodations to suit groups up to 400. For generations, Christians have enjoyed gathering and growing at Harvey Cedars. Each year, thousands of high school and college students come and learn more about God's Word. An additional 9,000 come annually to Harvey Cedars as families, couples, singles, men, women, pastors, seniors, and missionaries. 90 miles from New York City, 70 miles from Philly, and 95 miles from Wilmington, and easily accessible, scores of notable Christian groups frequently plan conferences at Harvey Cedars, like the Navigators, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, Campus Crusade, and the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Find Harvey Cedars on Facebook or at hcbible.org, hcbible.org. Call 609-494-5689, 609-494-5689. Harvey Cedars, where Christ finds people and changes lives.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnes, and if you just tuned us in, our guest today for the full 2 hours is Dr. David Innes, who is on the faculty of the King's College in New York City, and we are discussing faith and politics. Before we return to that discussion, one of our sponsors has an event that they want to invite you to, the Fellowship Conference New England. That is going to be held this August, the 4th through the 6th. At the Deering Center Community Church in Portland, Maine. And among the speakers are Jesse Barrington, Charles Leiter, Mike Durham, and a very dear friend of mine, Pastor Mac Tomlinson of Providence Chapel in Denton, Texas, who has been a guest a number of times on Iron Sharpens Iron. And this is going to be a wonderful time of not only hearing the Word of God preached by some powerfully gifted men, but there's also going to be a lot of time for fellowship and worship and singing and just an all-around wonderful time. And we hope that you could take advantage of it, especially if you live in or near Maine or have the means to get there by plane, train, or automobile. For more information on this conference, go to fellowshipconferencenewengland.com. That's fellowshipconferencenewengland.com. And once again, if you have any questions for our guest, Dr. David Innes, our email address is chrisarnsen@gmail.com, chrisarnsen@gmail.com. We have Bracey in Dix Hills, Long Island, New York, who says, "You are on record for exhorting Christians to stay out of the elections during this election cycle, according to The Guardian. So I want to know, are you concerned that your opinion as a Christian politics professor will influence many Christians to take a course of action, i.e. do not vote, that has the least impact on society against the forces of evil?"
Well, yeah, that was the interview I was referring to earlier. And when I say there are arguments on both sides, in that forum I was expressing that argument. But, you know, as the election proceeds, we think things through and become more sure of a position or less sure. You know, political science is not like medical science. And even medical science is somewhat of an art.
Mm-hmm.
Biology conquers our biological world. Physics conquers, brings under control our physical world. Political science boasts of being able to do that. Well, this is a science like any natural science. We can just bring our political and moral world under control, make it predictable. And that's a boast. A political scientist is not a natural scientist. And for that reason, at the King's College, we refer to the Department of Politics. I'm a professor of politics, not political science. because we understand that the human things can't be entirely predicted or controlled. And if they could, it would be something like totalitarianism, and it wouldn't be a good thing. So as I go through this election, I am trying to figure things out and try to figure out how a Christian ought to respond to these things. And I'm finding it's very complicated. There's the principial stand, there's the prudent stand. So what I'm sharing with you today is where my thinking is right now. I was of one position. Donald Trump, he cannot be elected president. He's crude. He's self-centered. He doesn't have enough regard for the rule of law. What he said about for example, torture. The military, they'll do what I say,
mm-hmm.
And so forth. You remember that moment?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And this is just frightening. Talking about prosecuting the press if they don't give him good coverage. And then you watch 13 Hours, the movie about Benghazi, and those brave men who died, and you think of Hillary Clinton's role in that, and you say, this woman can't be president. Really touched me. And then the whole email scandal and what happened with FBI Director James Comey and his presentation, and you think, this woman can't be president. Well, what's the alternative? The alternative is Donald Trump. And then you start weighing, okay, well, which one is better than the other? And what is the effect of just sitting out? Now, of course, sitting out in a swing state is not the same as swinging out in, like Wyoming or Alabama or Vermont, for that matter. So the effect of one sitting out is different in different states. But that's what I mean when I say you may come to a conclusion as to what the right thing is, but it's vastly complicated. And to judge one's fellow believers for not coming to the same practical conclusion as you do, though you may agree on all the principles, is really oversimplifying the situation. So it may be like I don't know, Christian schooling. Do I dare mention that? this person chooses this form of schooling because of their situation and the needs of their children and so forth, and this one chooses that alternative because of their situation, which is, our situations are very complicated, and it's tempting to judge one another. And in cases, maybe that's justified, I don't know. But this is even more complicated. This is very complicated. As I mentioned, the Supreme Court, Congress, the role of the administration, the alternative, Hillary Clinton, and how you weigh these factors about Donald Trump. There are a lot of people who are saying that the public Trump is not the real Trump. Well, then why is the public Trump there? On the other hand, these people speak well of him, Christian people. Obviously, Mike Pence is supporting him, okay? Mike Pence, who is very critical of him and had to be comforted by his friends, I am told, when it looked like Trump was going to get the nomination, and now he's going to be his vice president. And you have Paul Ryan, who is a Christian man of sound conservative principles, and he is making tactical judgments. And some people accuse him of selling out, but he's more likely thinking, I am not sitting in my basement reading the internet. I have practical responsibilities. I am the Speaker of the House, and how am I going to maximize the good for the American people? So he's making his judgment. So I don't claim to have everything figured out, but I'm sharing with you today the complexity as I see it at this point. The complexity may look different in 4 weeks, but at this point, this is the complexity as I see it. And that is politics. I teach my students that politics is not simple. Politics is not your messiah. Politics is complicated, and it's full of trade-offs and and tensions. You know, a tension is when you have two equally good things that are incompatible with one another. They pull you in different directions, and you can't just choose one or the other. That's what makes it a tension. And political life is full of those things. And when you think it's all simple, you're deceiving yourself and others, because that's the way it is in a fallen world. So, and I try to, because, you know, young people get caught up in political passions and causes and so forth, and I try to say, it's not that simple. Be wise. Be wise. This is what you tell young, passionate people. Be wise. The world is more complicated. This is what you see in the book of Proverbs. The world is complicated.
Oh, yes.
Do not answer a fool in his folly. And then two verses later or something, it says,
the next verse.
Not answering a fool.
Yeah.
In other words, it depends on the context. It requires prudence. It requires wisdom. So what is wisdom in this election for Christians? For me to tell you, wisdom is in this election, with all its baffling perplexity, for me to say, you know, wisdom is this, I think would be presumptuous and oversimplifying. That's why I'm trying to show arguments on both sides, and leave it for your audience to figure out.
Well, I want to give our listeners a bit of a surprise today. I'm interviewing one of the candidates for President of the United States, and I'm going to give you a couple of hints. One of his names begins with a D, and another hint to this would be the word castle, and I want to let you have a few seconds to try to figure that out. No, it's not Donald Trump, who used to own Trump Castle. It is Darryl Castle, who is the Constitution Party candidate. I'm interviewing him on August 2nd, and then the following day, on August 3rd, I'm interviewing Tom Hoefling, who is the America's Party candidate for president, and obviously most of the citizens of this country probably never heard of either of them, but I'm interviewing them because just to hear what candidates for the presidency that the media is going to be ignoring completely have to say, why they are even running, knowing that it is certain, barring some kind of modern day miracle that parallels the parting of the Red Sea, how they would possibly be elected president, and what they think is missing in the Republican Party and its candidate that would compel them to run. Both of these candidates are conservative, claim to be Christian, have biblical morality as a part of the very makeup of their fabric of life, and so on. So you might want to mark your calendars down for those two dates, August 2nd and August 3rd, if you'd like to ask them questions. And Darryl Castle is probably the more well-known of the two. Do you know anything about either of these candidates, Dr. Innes?
No, I don't know anything about the America's Party? I've never heard of that.
Okay, well, that's obvious.
That has not crossed my radar.
Okay, well, that is obviously just a independent conservative party that this Christian individual is running under. But Darryl Castle, I'm assuming you may have heard of Darryl Castle.
I looked him up on his website a few weeks ago. I wanted to know what the Constitution Party was doing this time around. And I think he's a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing that struck me about his website, and you could perhaps ask him about this, is he seemed to be giving in his video presentation of himself and his party the sort of presentation you would give in any given election. There was no reference to the crisis of our times. There was no reference to the chaos that was going on in the other parties. It was just a standard Constitution Party presentation. And I thought that was awfully tone deaf.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the time to be taking advantage of this stuff.
Talk oh, sure.
about the other candidates. Talk about the perplexity. Talk about the safe choice that is the Constitution Party. Talk about the future. When the GOP collapses, the Constitution Party will be. There's something like that. It's not difficult to make up. So I would ask him about that.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that he's just not very politically savvy. I don't know. I'm not saying he is or he isn't. I'm just knowing. I just know what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, governing requires an ability to speak to the people, to connect with the people, and to move the people to follow you. Mm-hmm. They have to. You have to show them that you hear them, that you have the wisdom that they're looking for. The sort of how to figure out this dangerous and confusing world, which is dangerous and confusing in any given time, and that you're the guy to follow, and that requires a rhetorical gift.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen candidates who just couldn't speak their way out of a paper bag, if that makes any sense. But
right.
And you think, well, that guy'd be a great candidate. He's got all the right positions, but he just can't talk. He doesn't know how to connect, and. So that is important in not just getting elected, but getting things done once elected.
I do know that George Grant, who you may be familiar with, who I interviewed recently, Presbyterian theologian, he knows Darrell Castle personally and thinks the world of him, although he doesn't think that Darrell has a chance, obviously, to win the election. And I'm not even saying that Dr. Grant is voting for him, because I don't know if he made that clear either. He just happens to know him personally. And Dr. Grant was actually one of the key figures involved in founding the Constitution Party, along with Howard Phillips and so on.
Well, I mean, the as you say, it is extremely unlikely that that the Constitution Party candidate will win this 2016 election. Nonetheless, one might vote for them, not with respect to any candidate in particular, but with respect to what the party stands for.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot bring myself, let's say, to vote for the Republican or the Democrats, so I can either stay, well, you wouldn't stay home, there's the down ticket to vote for, but I just won't vote for the presidential slot, or I will register my opinion by voting for the Constitution Party on the basis of what the party stands for. Maybe that will send a little bit of a signal. You know, if they double their popular support from 1% to 2%, maybe that will, you know, register on somebody's political radar up the chain.
No, maybe...
Yeah, there's an argument, for that, despite the fact that he's not going to win.
Right, if you could be clearer about that, because... obviously the folks that I know that have made it very obvious that they're voting for Trump, either regrettably, either that they're acquiescing to the fact that he is the lesser of two evils, or there are some that I know that are really excited about Donald Trump. But the common response to voting for an independent party candidate, is you are insane, you are wasting your vote, you're voting for Hillary Clinton, you are voting for abortion to become more rampant in this country, you are voting for homosexuality to be entered into more spheres of life than it is even now, and you're giving them more power, the homosexual rights activists and the feminists and the leftists, and you are really opening the gates for illegal aliens to come flooding in here and doing all kinds of atrocious things in regard to not only crime and murder in local areas, but nationwide terrorist acts. So that's basically what you hear when people say that you may vote just because of your conscience being bothered by voting for either Trump or obviously Hillary. You're any kind of a indication that you may not vote for Trump is you're almost on the level of being a traitor, is what I'm saying. So where would there be any value for somebody voting, in your opinion, for either a Darrell Castle or a Tom Hoefling or for a nobody?
Well, wow, Chris, you just made a very powerful argument for for voting practical rather than voting pure principle. What can I add? Well, I'll try. I was surprised. Let me back up a little. I was surprised that Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, this guy isn't even a Democrat. What stake does he have? He's an independent socialist in the Senate. Not even a Democrat. So what does he care whether Democrats win or not? I thought he would look at Trump and Hillary and say, why should I support Hillary Clinton? They're the same thing. They're both controlled by Wall Street. They're both in the 1%. What difference does it make? And I think a lot of his supporters think the same thing. But he did. So much for predicting the future. But it does make a difference, I think, who gets into power. It makes a difference in this way, and I'll fill in some of the details. The bathrooms and change rooms for your kids in your public school, if they're in public school, are now open to like whoever feels he's a girl that day, or in general. What else we talk about? These poor people lost their children to illegal aliens. The government is run by people who don't know how to. They can deal with American criminals, but a criminal born outside the country, they just don't know how to deal with that. And so your children get killed. Or maybe there's just an air of political correctness in the country, and people are afraid to say anything about, a young Arab male. And so they see something suspicious in this guy Mateen's garage going on, but they don't want to profile. They don't want to be politically incorrect, so they don't say anything. And then that guy and his wife shoot up a workplace. And maybe that involves one of your loved ones. It makes a difference. So there are greater and lesser evils in this world. And
Yeah, well, my question actually...
I could say, listen, I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't say to one of my friends, that is your fault. You have blood on your hands because you voted for a third-party candidate. I live in New York, right? Whether my friend does or does not vote this way or that way, I don't think it's going to make any difference. So I'm going to lay that on my friend. Now, if I was in Ohio, even then, I love my friends too much to address them in that way and lay that sort of responsibility on them for one vote. So people have to be decent. I mean, decency is in short supply these days, in and outside of the church. I just made a case for voting for Donald Trump.
Right. That's exactly... My question was actually, is there value at all in voting for an independent party candidate that is going to be a certain loser? But if you could...
You want me to make the argument?
Voting for an independent party candidate. Yeah, but you have to do that after the break, though. We have to go to a break right now.
Okay.
And if you would like to join us on the air as well, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com, and please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. And I'm especially looking forward to hearing from actually those from overseas who from time to time chime in on this program, because I'm dying to hear about what some of our overseas listeners think about what's happening here in our race, our presidential election here. And so would love to hear from you at chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And by the way, I forgot to mention this earlier. We had a couple of first-time emails from a couple of listeners. That would be Bracey, I think there was one other first-time listener today that sent in an email, but you are getting a free copy of the New American Standard Bible, compliments of the publishers of the New American Standard Bible, who have been sponsoring this program since it first went on the air in 2006, and we thank the publishers of the NASB for helping Iron Sharpens Iron to remain on the air. So we're going to need your full mailing addresses to get those free Bibles out to you. Anyway, we're going to be right back with Dr. David Innes and more of our discussion on faith and politics after these messages, so don't go away.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750. That's 508-528-5750. Or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at providencebaptistchurchma.org. That's providencebaptistchurchma.org. Or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnes, and if you just tuned us in for the full 2 hours today, we are having as our guest Dr. David Innes, who's on the faculty at the King's College in New York City. We're talking about faith and politics. And in a minute, we're going to be hearing more about his books, Left, Right, and Christ, Evangelical Faith and Politics, which is coming out in a new edition very shortly, God willing, and also another book that he has written, and we will find out, as I said, in a moment about that. But if you could address any pros or benefits to a Christian saying, "I know he's going to lose, but I'm pulling that lever for Daryl Castle or Tom Hoefling or any other conservative, Bible-believing man of principle, even when it is going to be a certain loss, barring a modern-day miracle that parallels the parting of the Red Sea." If you could, why on earth would somebody do that? And in essence, as people very often say, that means that they're just pulling the lever for Hillary Clinton. And there may be people who want to pull the lever for Hillary Clinton for completely different reasons, but I'm talking about in the voting booth.
I don't understand. understand it, but there you go.
That's what you think, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, when I say I can make an argument for that, too, I want you to understand, I'm not someone who says, well, you know, there's no truth on this matter. I can argue it this way or I can argue it that way. Not at all. There is a truth in this matter. In the mind of God, who understands everything perfectly, there is a right thing to do. For us, with our epistemic limitations, with our, you know, the noetic effects of the fall, the effects of the fall on our minds and our judgments and our passions, our political passions, which cloud our judgment and so forth, it's not always that clear. Sometimes it is clear. Sometimes the decision we think is clear, but it's not as clear as we think it is. And then sometimes it is just not clear. And we all have these moments, like when you have to hire someone, or maybe you want to marry someone, or should I marry him, or should I not marry him, or decisions in life. Should I buy this house? Should I not buy this house? The decisions aren't always clear. And why should politics, which is infinitely, sorry, which is more complicated than some of these things, why should it be any different? But is there an argument for somebody voting for a third-party candidate when you know this person will not be elected? One could say, listen, the Church of Jesus Christ is here to serve our Lord and to witness for our Lord. It's not just about, am I better off now than I was 4 years ago? It's not just about, how can I use my vote tactically to make things safer rather than not safer? Your vote is an act of worship. It is an act of witness. And when the Church of Jesus Christ votes for a candidate who is apparently, arguably, this compromised, we compromise our own witness. And God is sovereign. God raises up governments, and he brings them down. Mm-hmm. God has given us these two candidates, these two major candidates. The question for us is, what are we going to do about it? And the Church has a responsibility to witness to the world in advocating a godly candidate, a candidate who is consciously striving to manifest the wisdom of God in the government of this nation. And so I am voting for this third-party candidate because that's how to do that. I am not going to vote for one of these two candidates because clearly neither one of those candidates is interested in the mind of God on any issue whatsoever. Okay? So there is a plausible argument, and I wouldn't judge anyone for acting on that argument.
How would you address the argument that well, the president really doesn't have a whole lot to say about the social issues today anyway?
In fact, there's a listener who has a question that really really goes hand in hand with that. Bob in Great Neck, Long Island, says, isn't it true that the best way for improvement to be made in this nation is really for the masses in the population who are citizens here to frighten the president to make decisions that they're in their best interests? For instance, if the president thinks he's going to lose the support of his constituency in certain areas, that will be a better way of securing what we need to have accomplished in this country, rather than thinking that the person himself is really in power. I don't know if that was clear enough for you.
I'm not quite sure what the question is. At first, I thought the question was about the president doesn't have that much power,
right,
in the first place, and then it went off into the president is accountable to the people. The president, of course, is concerned about re-election and maybe the re-election of his party in Congress, and so people should frighten. That's an interesting way of putting it. Should scare the president by withholding their support. Well, that's the democratic process, isn't it? You withhold your support, you publicly criticize in hopes that that candidate or another candidate will come around to your position. So this is what evangelical leaders were trying to do early on in the primaries. People like Russell Moore and other prominent Christian leaders. In World Magazine, they did a survey of evangelical leaders and found that very few of them were in favor of Donald Trump. Most of them seem to be in favor of Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, mostly Marco Rubio, I think. But ordinary people were a different story. There was a real disconnect between the leaders and those they were leading. It struck me.
But
evangelicals were not behind Donald Trump early on in the primaries. But that didn't seem to scare him at all. And the same with conservatives. All the thinking conservatives were and maybe still are against Trump. It didn't bother him at all. So, okay, well, that didn't work. As for the president not having any influence over social issues, I wish that were so. I wish this were Calvin Coolidge's America in that regard. A very pre-FDR presidency, but the executive branch of it has expanded in every direction. Do you know that the executive branch has absorbed the other two branches? It has absorbed legislative responsibilities as well as judicial responsibilities.
Yes.
So you have a president saying, "I don't think this law is constitutional, so I'm not going to enforce it." Well, his time to do that is in the veto process. Once the law is passed, he has to enforce it, regardless of what he thinks of it. So he's taken up the judicial function there, which is the violation of the separation of powers. And also, we've seen a lot under this president taking up the legislative powers. Well, if Congress won't pass this law, I will put it into effect through executive orders, through the way I enforce or choose not to enforce the laws, and then just through regulations, insert regulations. And then you consider the administrative part of government, the agencies, like the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, the IRS, the Food and Drug Administration, all these agencies. Congress passes broad, vague laws, and then they hand them over to the bureaucracy to fill in regulations and so forth. So, and then these unaccountable regulatory agencies and bureaucracies end up executing the laws, they end up passing new law in the form of regulation, and then they end up judging you for having violated these regulations. So these bureaucracies combine the powers of the executive, legislative, and judiciary in themselves, which Thomas Jefferson rightly said, as well as James Madison, is the very definition of tyranny.
Right. Yeah.
They were onto something there. So this is what's going on. And the president oversees all of that. I wish he didn't have any. You look at the Dear Colleague letter that his Justice Department and Education Department sent to the schools. Oh, by the way, when we interpret Title IX from now on, we will interpret it to mean that discrimination against transgender students, which is now a thing, will be covered by Title IX. So transgender students get to be on whatever sports team they want, they get to be in whatever bathroom, whatever change room they want, and so forth, and that's the way things are now. That is the public schools. That changes the whole of American life.
Yes.
The nature of what it is to be a human being.
Yeah.
Don't tell me the president doesn't affect social policies his control over abortion funding here and abroad.
Yeah. I seriously doubt that anybody in the public schools today is learning about the separation of powers.
Oh, no, of course not. And we've mentioned schools a couple of times. I continue to wonder every decade, what will it take to get people out of the public schools into private Christian schooling? Uh, or, or private schooling. The shootings, craziness in sex ed classes, craziness in bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What does it take? Apparently, there's nothing that can switch. Some people are poor. They just can't afford to get out of the public schools. It's that or nothing. Other people, they can. Anyway, but I throw that in. Hey, speaking of throwing things in, I noticed a couple of breaks ago, and this is maybe my opportunity to jump in. You had an ad for World Magazine.
Yes.
World Magazine, one of your sponsors. Let me say something about World Magazine. I was another fine outfit. I had the privilege of writing a weekly column for worldmag.com, the online version of the magazine. And I also had the privilege of serving under Marvin Olasky when he was the provost at the King's College. So I know Marvin. I know what he's written. And I've worked with some of the world people on the inside from a distance, you know, writing the column. And they are, I think, the only Christian news magazine, but they are a fine, fine outfit. Marvin Olasky wrote the book, literally wrote the book on journalistic integrity. His book, Prodigal Press, explains what journalistic integrity is, what the calling of a journalist is as truth discoverer and truth teller. And the World Magazine people are genuinely conscientious about the truth and about the journalist's craft. And they're fine, godly people, and they really are a credit to the journalistic profession in a day when that isn't always true. For example, they're conscious of the temptation to clickbait. There's a lot of journalism that is just about headlines and content and ads that will get people clicking and generating revenues. They're not going to go down that road. I mean, they want revenues, right?
Yes.
Money pays for things, but they won't sell their souls for it. They are a shining example of Christian integrity in a world desperately in need of it. So I just throw that in as somebody who's been on the inside and knows these people.
Well, I just received my new commercial for World Magazine. I'm going to get to editing on that right now. And
yeah, edit that now. Any way you please.
But I really appreciate that, I'm sure World Magazine appreciates that very much.
Yeah, you send them a copy of this interview. I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I will. Well, let's talk a bit about your two books. The first you co-authored with a liberal who professes to be an evangelical Christian and yet it simultaneously adheres to liberal political views. That would be Lisa Sharon Harper. And this is the book Left, Right, and Christ, Evangelical Faith and Politics. And then, of course, after you explain that book, if you could tell us about your new book that's going to be hot off the press very shortly.
Okay, sure. Left, Right, and Christ, Evangelical Faith and Politics is a book that presents some broad principles of politics from the left and from the right, and then addresses various hot-button topics like abortion, healthcare, same-sex marriage, the environment, and so forth, from the left and from the right, from the evangelical left and the evangelical right. It's not supposed to be just a book of right-wing talking points, left-wing talking points, but thinking about these things on a biblical basis, what conclusions arguably does one come to? And I am an identifiable conservative in the American tradition of liberty, and Lisa is a liberal, one might call her a progressive, I think is a better term, because they believe in human progress, and particularly progressing beyond the Constitution. and also the sort of unfolding of human enlightenment from generation to generation, I think progressive describes them better than the word liberal, which used to mean oriented toward individual liberty. So, but Lisa is from that point of view. And the book came out in 2011, and it is relevant in any time, but I think it is particularly relevant today because Bernie Sanders, the socialist from Vermont with his radical views, caught the attention of a lot of young evangelicals. And a surprising number of them claim to have felt the burn. So if their left-wing views are taking a particularly evangelical form, if they try to be obedient to the gospel and at the same time embrace this emotionally appealing political doctrine of equal outcomes and dragging down the rich and lifting up the poor through state action. This is the sort of stuff that is entering their heads. This is the sort of stuff they're learning about, the sort of thing Lisa talks about. This is the sort of stuff they get at their, you know, big Jubilee conferences and these big rallies and events they go to, or just stuff they pick up on websites. So the book would be, at this time, very useful in understanding young people who are trending left and offering responses to them on these important topics and helping them, my side of the book, I believe, would help them build a biblical political worldview. So it is, the book is I think particularly useful and pertinent at this time by Elevate Publishers, Elevate, Left, Right, and Christ.
And so what is the new book, the title again?
The other book is, it's entitled The Voting Christian.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Seeking Wisdom for the Ballot Box. And it's just that. I'm addressing Christians who are facing the responsibility to vote or not vote in the fall, in November, and who are seeking wisdom as that day approaches. So there's the title. And what I've done is I've taken World Magazine columns that I've written over the last several years and arranged them in broad principles to consider when approaching the whole question, and then various, again, practical subjects, and some subjects that don't appear in Left, Right, and Christ, like religious liberty. 5 years ago, we didn't think religious liberty was at all in question, and now it's hanging by a thread. So religious liberty, the sexual revolution, race and police, and things of this sort. And then there's a reflection back on the last several years, you know, where we've come. Some articles on the president and what he's done, and then some concluding thoughts post GOP Christian voting. Is that where we're going? Should Christians be advocating a Liberty Party or something like this? Rod Dreher has advocated something called the Benedict option. We're entering a new dark ages, he says, the Benedictine option of drawing back from the culture wars and focusing on building Christian community and Christian witness is this Benedict option. So I have three columns on that. And then the last one is Following Jesus as Public Enemy. Well, that doesn't sound appropriate. An appropriate description of our situation. You haven't been paying attention. So that is also a book that will be, I hope, helpful to people facing this election and the future in general.
When is that coming out?
They're both coming out the middle of August. Left, Right, and Christ is coming out August 9th. You can pre-order on Amazon. The Voting Christian will probably about the middle of the month, and you'll have to wait for that. But if you follow me on Twitter or on Instagram, or on Facebook, you are sure to find out about it.
Okay, and that's David C. Innes, I-N-N-E-S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Twitter Twitter handle is DCInnes1, I think, DCInnes1. Facebook, it's easy to find people on Facebook. And Instagram, I think it's DCInnes. Yeah, DCInnes. Instagram, I'm just on Instagram, it's really fun.
Well, we're going to our final break right now, and this is your last opportunity to send us a question. We do have a couple of people waiting to have their questions asked, so if you'd like to join them and have your questions asked on the air and answered by David to the best of his ability, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And by the way, Bob in Great Neck, you are a first-time questioner, for lack of a better term, because I don't know if you're a first-time listener, but you're a first-time questioner. So we will be mailing you a copy of the New American Standard Bible, compliments of the publishers, absolutely free of charge if you give us your full mailing address. And we'd also like to thank Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, cvbbs.com, for shipping out all of the books and Bibles that our listeners win at no charge to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. And we are forever in their debt for such graciousness and generosity and helping us to remain on the air with their support. So that's CV as in Victory, BBS.com for Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. And we're going to be going to our final break, as I said, so don't go away. We're going to be right back with the final half hour of our interview with Dr. David Innes on faith and politics.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, here to tell you about an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World at no charge for 90 days and get a free copy of R.C. Sproul's book, Relationship Between Church and State. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis, and World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes bi-weekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. Simply visit wmg.org/ironsharpens to get your world trial and Dr. Sproul's book all free. No obligation with no credit card required. Visit World News Group at wng.org/ironsharpens today.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new Topical Reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity? Of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Attention coin collectors and investors. Long Island Galleries of Wading River, New York.
has brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars for only $54 per coin, with free shipping and handling for a limited time. There's a 40-coin limit, so order now while supplies last. Call 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express welcome. Prices subject to change, so call now at 888-260-8111. 888-260-8111. If you prefer ordering your brilliant, uncirculated 19th century Morgan silver dollars by check, mail it today to Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. That's Long Island Galleries, 9 Susan Drive, Wading River, New York, 11792. Remember, they're only $54 per coin with free shipping and handling and a 40-coin limit. New York State residents must add sales tax. Long Island Galleries is honored to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. See the Long Island Galleries display ad at ironsharpensironradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen, and just to remind you, if you hear a website or any kind of contact information about an ad you are interested in on Iron Sharpens Iron and you don't remember what the website was, you didn't write it down, you can always go to ironsharpensironradio.com, ironsharpensironradio.com, and scroll all the way to the bottom. We have all of our sponsors' banner ads there, and if you click on those banner ads, each one will take you with a hyperlink to the website of the sponsor. So you don't necessarily have to remember the sponsors' phone numbers or their website addresses. Just go to ironsharpensironradio.com, and they're all there at the bottom. If you'd like to join us on the air right now, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And Harrison in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, has a question that I was going to ask you, Dr. Innes. Harrison wants to know what your thoughts are on Hillary Clinton being cleared by the FBI, and he wants to know if you think there's more to it than just an honest investigation by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or if there was some coercion behind the scenes that made them come to this conclusion that she should not be charged.
Well, I wouldn't say there was, maybe there was coercion behind the scenes. I don't think so. The coercion was right out there in public. Essentially, he saw that the fix was in. Before he made his decision, you saw the president, who is his boss, go out in public and say, "I endorse Hillary Clinton for president." How can he do that?
Right.
He's under investigation by the FBI. Obviously, if he endorses her and the FBI recommends an indictment, then he looks bad. So the fact that he's endorsing her, he's signaling to Comey, don't make things hard on yourself. Make the right decision because I'm endorsing her. And Comey is a man under authority. He's a very intelligent man. And he saw that, you know, this is done. If I push back against this, I'm going to lose. And so he did, I think, in his judgment, the best thing he could do. He gave a 20-minute exposition of how this woman was guilty of sin, and then said, but we're not going to prosecute her because no reasonable prosecutor would. There's only one person who's ever been prosecuted under this, and so forth and so on. Now, after the Tuesday announcement, former Attorney General Michael Mukasey published an essay in the Wall Street Journal saying, what are you talking about? This is an open and shut case. I would have prosecuted. So it's not as if no reasonable person would prosecute her. Michael Mukasey is a reasonable person and a former Attorney General, and he said the case for prosecuting her is right there. So, yeah, he saw the fix was in. He saw that the big man had told him or signaled to him in public that this is the way you will decide it. And so that's, I think he made the best of that. And so I think it was short-sighted of her opponents to pile on to Comey instead of piling on to what Comey said about her. That's what I think happened.
And we also have Arnie in Perry County, Pennsylvania, who asks, do you think there is a realistic possibility still of a Ted Cruz or someone being nominated by the party, even though the people have spoken in regard to Donald Trump?
Oh, no, I don't think there's any chance of that. I don't think there's any chance of that at all. The first day of the convention, was clear on the first, that is yesterday, that the Trump forces are in control. The party establishment, ironically, is behind Trump now. And really the only insurgency yesterday was with a view to 2020, assuming that Trump loses, a way of changing the rules so that they can prevent this sort of thing happening again. I think it pertained to closed primaries, which I think makes perfect sense to me. Why on earth would you let non-party members help elect the party standard bearer? Doesn't make any sense. But anyway, so no, I don't think there's any chance of that. It's all wrapped up. And you know, most people voted for Donald Trump. Most of the delegates, he won fair and square. So on we go.
Now, it's interesting that there is, I think you said it earlier, a 60% unpopularity percentage for Trump in this election, and yet he is also, from what I keep hearing, the candidate who received more votes in the primaries than anyone in history. Is that correct? Are they both true?
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't the world a fascinating place? what is behind those figures? Is that 60%? Is that a national poll? I think it's a national poll. It has to be a national poll. Whereas the more votes than anyone else in the history of the Republican Party, that is an in-party poll. And that's not even a poll. It's people who come out and vote. So Trump tended to do better in open primaries, which means people who are not registered Republicans came out to the polls in greater numbers than ever before and voted for Donald Trump to be the Republican candidate. They're kind of pre-voting, if you will. So that seems to have been the key to his success, and they presumably will vote for him in the general. But there's a lot of people, but the people who participate in the primaries are a relatively small fraction of people in the electorate in general. Even a relatively small fraction of people who are likely voters or actually vote in the general election. So that's the way it is with parties.
CJ from Lindenhurst, Long Island, wants to know, why specifically do conservatives call Donald Trump a liberal when it seems the liberals despise him so much and he is for a strong military and is pro-life? So please, if you could, explain why this conclusion is made by hardcore conservatives in the Republican Party.
Well, that's a great question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Donald Trump seems to embody an older kind of Democrat, one who is, in a sense, strong on foreign policy. He wants to stand up to the Soviets, is what they used to do. You know, JFK had a tough foreign policy, but he was liberal on social questions. Kennedy is a Kennedy, even back then. So Donald Trump seems to be that kind of Democrat. But for that reason, contemporary Democrats who are far, far left now, contemporary Democrats are further left than they were 8 years ago even.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps because of the Bernie factor and the fallout of the financial crisis. So that's why they hate him. And the conservatives in the Republican Party don't trust him, because he is this what we would now call a hybrid, but used to be called a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's interesting that Hillary Clinton, during her primary race against Bernie Sanders, I never heard her say, ladies and gentlemen of the United States, how could you possibly even consider voting for a socialist? That was not her rhetoric. It was, we're not that different. We're almost the same.
Yeah.
And yet, whenever prior to this, whenever people would make the insinuations that the Clintons or Barack Obama or most of those who are in political power in the Democratic Party, when the insinuations or accusations were made that they were socialists, they would laugh and mock those accusations. Well, how could you say that there's not much difference between you and Bernie Sanders and yet mock someone who calls you a socialist?
Yeah, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, was asked on a talk show about that very thing. Don't you think it's strange that a socialist is running for the Democratic Party leadership? What do you think of that? And she just avoided the question. Well, I want to focus on Donald Trump. Well, let's focus on the socialists. Well, you know, let's focus on Donald. Just avoid the question. And Hillary Clinton has done the same thing because they know that a lot of Democratic young people especially are keen on Bernie, and they don't want to offend those voters. It's all calculation. Whereas, you have Republicans accusing Donald Trump, with good grounds, of being a Democrat, and that becomes a subject of discussion. But, so.
Now, can a socialist be in bed with Wall Street, as Bernie Sanders used to say about Hillary Clinton? Can the two things coincide?
Perplexing question of why exactly he endorsed her. He, as best I can figure it out, he endorsed her so that he could have greater control over the convention and greater influence, therefore, in the next generation of Democratic Party politics. He's kind of old. He knows this is his last shot, so he's maximizing it. He's calculating, how can I steer this party for someone like me later on, and this is how he's doing it. He wants to capture, and he has successfully captured, the Democratic Party. As for Hillary Clinton, you know, we talk about Bernie Sanders is a socialist. How can he get the nomination of the Democratic Party? But Hillary Clinton, anyone looking at her soberly would admit, is a plutocrat. She's not a Democrat. She's a plutocrat. The Clintons are all about Clinton Incorporated. So this is what the email scandal was about. Hide the emails and any emails pertaining to the Clinton Foundation and basically selling foreign policy concessions in exchange for donations to the Clinton Foundation. And this is the way she's conducted our foreign policy. This is the way she will conduct her presidency. When Bill Clinton was president, he did the same thing, renting out the Lincoln bedroom in exchange for campaign contributions and other things of this sort. So this is Hillary Clinton, not a woman of the people, although pretends to be, when given the choice between the well-being of the people and even the little people and the enrichment of the Clintons, she'll go with the enrichment of the Clintons every time. So that's a plutocrat, a plutos, Greek for wealth, right? So the rule of wealth, hers in particular.
So then,
the Democratic Party is a mess, and we would be focusing on that if there weren't such turmoil on the Republican side.
Right. Well, couldn't you identify Donald Trump as a plutocrat?
One could identify him as a plutocrat. I cite his Nevada speech after the primaries. He said, all my life it's been grab, 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 and now I want to do that for you as well, and we're all going to grab, and we're going to make America great again. Right? That's what he said. So now he claims not to be controlled by Wall Street. He's got his own money. Well, there's a, that's plausible. Although he's focused his entire life on making money. Maybe, but he's also had these strong opinions about the borders and immigration and unfair trade practices. This goes back a long, long time. So these seem to be core beliefs. So maybe there is a genuine patriot there in his own way, in his very limited understanding of what a patriot is, all revolving around business ideas, of course, not about the Constitution and individual liberty and freedom of religious liberty and free press and things like that. That doesn't seem to be part of his thinking of what a patriot defends. Understood in business terms. He has thought in business terms his entire life. You don't change when you're 70.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I don't understand is that people keep buying the rhetoric and actually repeating it, that he was an outsider to the political machine, that he is not a politician and so on. But yet, he seemed to be bragging constantly that he used to buy politicians throughout his whole career. I mean, wouldn't that place you right in the middle of the mess? If you know, because when he was confronted with why he had made such huge contributions to liberal political candidates and so on, it was always, well, that's what you do in business. You know, you basically line the pockets of people. I mean, wouldn't that make him a part of that whole machine?
Well, yeah, he argues that, well, no, yes, I did those things. I'll freely admit it. And so I know how bad things are, and I'm going to go in and I won't be bought. On the other hand, I mean, we're looking, when you look at these candidates, you're looking from the ground up at their lofty heights, and it's hard to make out the lines and the details of their lives. You try to piece things together from a distance as though looking through, you know, foggy windows. And maybe what he's saying is true, or maybe the way he understands politics is bribery and influence peddling, and so he expects people to bribe him and peddle their influence. Which way is the peddling going? But so which will be true? You see, the thing with Hillary Clinton is we know her. We know her from 25 years in politics or more, if you're from Arkansas. We know who she is politically. And we know Donald Trump from his television shows and his business and self-promotion career in New York City and so forth. But we don't really know him politically. So there's a lot of unpredictability about Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And a lot of absolute predictability about Hillary Clinton. So this is part of what makes the decision difficult. When you have political people with political records, you know where Rick Santorum is going. You know where John Kasich, two-term governor, a congressman, so forth. You know where this guy's coming from, and you know where he's going. And he's an older guy, so he's not going to change. This is who he is. Marco Rubio is a younger man, so does he even understand himself? Probably not as much as he thinks he does. So there's an unpredictability about Marco Rubio. Is he just? And I supported Marco Rubio for what that's worth. But how much of it is just a good talk that he sincerely believes? And where does the actual ability come in? So there's that unpredictability with him. With Donald Trump, it's like, what will he do in politics? He's run this business empire, but running a government is not like running a business empire. It's vastly more complicated and takes related skills, but nonetheless a different set of skills. So how will that work? I mean, doesn't seem to be having an easy time running a political campaign, and that's always a test for how well somebody will run the country. Not an infallible test, but a test, a credible test. So he doesn't seem to be doing very well on that. So but this is just a question. I'm not making assertions. But Hillary Clinton, she's predictable. So this is part of what's before us. Will he be a plutocrat? Will he be an influence peddler? Will he be continue his life of grab, grab, grab once he's in the office? Or will he universalize it and nationalize it? But even then, what will that look like? As the country grabbing people's oil, own protection around the world? Will we be the international mercenary regime? Who knows? And then, of course, the president is limited by Congress. He can't just – we're not electing him king. He can only do what Congress allows him to do. So we'll see how the negotiator does. But in politics, he doesn't seem to be as good a negotiator, a deal maker, as he has been in New York real estate. Mm-hmm. You would think he would have taken a more negotiative position with John Kasich, the popular governor of an important swing state, and Susana Martinez, a popular Hispanic woman governor in a southwestern swing state. Instead, he insults them. So what on earth is that? What kind of deal-making is that? What is he supposed to get out of that? So the art of the deal, great for his real estate empire, but I haven't seen it showing itself in the conduct of the campaign. So again, there's this question hanging over him. But it's not like we have 10 candidates from which to choose, unless you go for all the various third-party candidates, apparently in America's party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the et cetera, et cetera. You know?
The Iron Sharpens Iron Party. Anyway.
Why not? Why not? Can I write you in?
Do you know, I think we're probably close to the same age. I'm 54. I can't.
Oh, yeah, right on.
Mm-hmm. So is that what you are, 54?
Sure.
Wow, that's some providential thing.
Who saw two people born in the same year?
And I cannot remember a political race, as far as the primaries are concerned, where the church, where Christians were so sharply divided over a candidate as with Donald Trump. I mean, there was some with Mitt Romney, but this was above and beyond what I remember with Mitt Romney. Do you remember anything from history, even if it was before your time, just your knowledge of history, where the Christians were so sharply divided in the United States over a political candidate?
I don't remember, and I'm not really a student of history, but I have had my eyes and ears open. Again, we've been spoiled. The evangelicalism, as we know it today, came into being in the late 1950s with Harold Ockingay and Billy Graham and so forth. And then we came to 1980, where they really got their candidate in Ronald Reagan. And since then, we've just felt that we as an American, as American Christians, are entitled to a godly, I'm on your side evangelicals candidate, because two terms of Reagan, then you had George H.W. Bush, who said he had a born again experience, and he was a thoroughly decent man, and who would question him? And then, of course, Bill Clinton, he's a Southern Baptist, what's your problem? We have a lot of problems. I remember at the beginning of his presidency, he was waving at somebody on the way to church on that first Sunday after the inauguration, and I noted it was an awfully new-looking Bible, unthumbed. Anyway, and then George W. Bush, the born-again Reaganite, I mean, there's a godly man, in his own way humble, and so forth. So George W. Bush, no problem, and that brings us to Barack Obama. So I don't think Christians have expected a Christian candidate, or you go back far enough, it's just assumed that they're Christian candidates.
Right, right.
They're all churchgoers, they're Episcopalians of one kind or another. So what's the issue back then? That was not the issue. It's only after the 1960s and in the 1970s where the cultural assault against Christian civilization, after that started, then we start looking for a Christian candidate, as though that's an unusual thing. And we were spoiled, and now, whether you look after that with John McCain, not too many people were upset at John McCain, although he did stick it to the evangelicals in South Carolina, and that had people upset. Then there's the Mitt Romney, the Mormon candidate. We're going, what's going on? What can we possibly do with this? And if fewer Christians had dissented from that, we might have had a Romney presidency instead of a second term of Barack Obama.
That's interesting.
You're listening audience to figure out the consequences of that.
That's interesting, but, that Mitt Romney used the same accusations against Donald Trump as being a charlatan when it comes to being a true conservative. Those were the very accusations being hurled at him because he had been so clearly liberal in his voting record prior to running for president.
Well, I was in Massachusetts in 2004 when the push for gay marriage there was happening, and he was against it.
Oh, really?
There was only so much he could do as governor of that state, but he was, as I recall, he fought it. So Mitt Romney is a thoroughly decent man, a modest man, but... does he check all the political boxes correctly? I suspect not. But, yes, sometimes we look back on what we had before somewhat, rosily. Ronald Reagan, you look back at 1980 and, there would be people who are looking at his record as governor and saying, I don't know about this guy, maybe a good Goldwater conservative. I don't know about this guy. The talk is good over here, but over here you look at his record. Well, he was governor of California. You have to make political compromises to get things done. And you have to take that into account when judging a politician.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you're not king. You have to work with people.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we're going...
Half a loaf is better than no loaf, as they say.
Right. We're going 3 minutes over because of the fact that we went on 3 minutes late. So I would like you to try to... I know that you're not a prophet... Being an Orthodox Presbyterian, you would never claim such a thing. Can you just differentiate what you think America will look like, both to start with, if Trump wins and then if Hillary wins?
Okay, let me throw this at you. It is quite possible that the Republic is over. Historians 100 years from now will look back and say the American Republic this year until around then, and then, like the Roman Republic, it just went into decline. 1980, with the Reagan presidency, was the last push to revive Republican liberty, and it fizzled out. And Hillary Clinton, a woman with no regard for the law, no regard really for, it seems to me, anyone other than herself. If she becomes president, she just may continue that. Barack Obama has done terrible damage to our separation of powers, the integrity of the Constitution. And then if Hillary Clinton appoints three justices, liberal justices, then forget it. The same-sex marriage decision was essentially made up out of nothing. The Chief Justice himself said in his dissent, no reference at all to the text of the Constitution. That's where we're going. So the Republic may be over. Donald Trump may slow it a little, or maybe continue it in his own way, unpredictable way. I don't know. But so that may be. I'm just saying maybe. That may be where things are going. But the Lord, we pray to the Lord for mercy, and it would be mercy, not our entitlement, to look forward to if we got a new era of a robust love of liberty. But that would be God's doing despite all natural evidence.
Well, if you could, in the 2 minutes that we have left, just summarize what you most want etched on the listeners' hearts and minds today.
Oh, dear. Know the word, know the world, and apply the word to the world. Each one of those things is extremely difficult and could take a lifetime. But that's what we're called to as Christians, yeah. As voting Christians, as living Christians. Know God's word, know the world in which you're living, and apply God's word to the world.
Amen.
Your marching orders.
Amen. Well, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they have further questions or if they want to keep up to date on your books and so on?
Well, on Twitter, I'm at DCInnis1, and my Facebook page is open. Anyone can friend me, and David C. Innes is popular. The one that says the King's College in New York City underneath his name. That's me. And I put funny stuff up, sometimes stuff about my cat, news things and stuff that I'm writing, and so forth. So I try to make it value added for anyone who's following me.
Great. Well, I want to thank you so much for being back on the program. I want to thank all of our listeners, especially those who took the time to write in. I want to thank my co-host, Reverend Buzz Taylor, for being here with me. And I want all of you to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far, far greater Savior than you are a sinner. We look forward to hearing from you tomorrow and your questions for our guest on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. God bless.